Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Harsha Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaura Gopinath Sharma Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Pramana. All glories to the assembled. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Vipane Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nivisesu Sundarani Pasachandasatam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Rita Padakamana. Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Scha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vikam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstra Vanchakapa Chubhishchaki Vasundi Vachap Tichanam Pavanavya Vaishnu Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's January 11, 2016, in New Varshana, Auckland, New Zealand, reading from Canto 2, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation, Text 6. This is supposed to be a children's class. So if you're not a child, I hope you enjoy it. Bhuya eva vivitsami Bhagavan atma mayaya Yate dam srijate vishvam Vurbhivavyam adishvarai. Please check. Bhuyaha, again, eva, also, vivitsami, I wish to learn, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, atma, personal, mayaya, by the energies, yata, as, idam, this phenomenal world, srijate, does create, vishram, universe, durbibhavyam, inconceivable, adishvarai, by the great demigods. Srila Prabhupada's translation. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the great demigods. So this is a four-page purport, and as this is supposed to be a family day in children's class, I think rather than reading the whole purport, which would take us all the way to 8:15, I think what I'm going to do is just read some sections of the purport. Okay. So Prabhupada starts out in this purport saying that everyone who's curious, everyone who's inquisitive, wants to know about how the world was created. So I think we can say that everybody wants to know, where does this world come from, right? Why am I here? What am I doing here? What's going on? As some people ask Srila Prabhupada in South America, why is there anything? Right? Now, usually when children ask their parents, you know, where did I come from? Where did the world come from? Then the parents simply try to very delicately talk about reproduction. But this is a basic question that everybody asks at some point. You know, usually it's somewhere around 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, somewhere around that age where a person will say, you know, where did everything come from? And Srila Prabhupada explains that any intelligent person can understand that there must be a creator. He says here that we don't have any experience in the world that a thing is created automatically. He says only foolish people say that the creative energy acts automatically, like electricity. But the intelligent person knows that the electrical energy is created by an expert engineer. So you might think, well, if I want to have light, I just turn on the switch and then there's light. Right? But is that true? Could you just pick any switch and turn it on and then there's light? No. How does a switch give you light? It's connected to a wire, right? If you just go to the hardware store and you just buy a switch, and you, right? Sometimes you see baby toys that just have switches, right? That don't really do anything, just for the babies to move back and forth. So if you just buy a switch and turn it off and on, it's not going to give you, it's not going to turn on the lights. It has to have a wire, and the wire has to be connected ultimately where? To some sort of a source. It has to be a power source. Have you girls ever been to a power station? Hey, Radha, have you ever been to a power station? So where do we get electricity from, do you know? You don't know where it comes from? So this is, we could have a whole science class based on this Bhagavatam verse, right? Soul power. Now you should do that more in Aruda's books. You should have more like science and geography and history. So this would be a very good science class. You know, how is electricity generated? You know, electricity has a lot to do with magnetism and things that are moving. Right? So electricity is generated by wind. You can have a wind generator, and it moves the turbines. And when you move a magnet by wires, you get electricity. And it can also be done by the sun. Have you ever seen solar panels? So the solar panels also, they heat up and they move the turbines and they make electricity. Or you can burn things. You can burn wood. You could burn coal. You could burn oil. Again, to move your turbines and get electricity. But it doesn't just happen by itself. Of course, sometimes we see electricity without us doing anything in the powerhouse. When do we see that? When do we see electricity, Lalita? We have Radha and Lalita here. Well, you just Vishakha and Sudevi and Chitra. Where do we see electricity happening without wires and without a powerhouse? Yeah? Lightning! Okay. And the lightning. But it's pretty hard to capture the lightning. You know, if you wanted to light up your room, right, with the lightning, and we could say, well, who's generating the lightning? That seems to just be coming by itself. But Indra, you're the best student in this child's class, Tanisha. So, years ago, I remember in our Gurukula, we had one book about lightning and thunder, and it was my daughter who pointed out to me. It was made by non-devotees. My daughter pointed out to me how ridiculous this book was, that it started out by saying, primitive people used to believe that, you know, great gods in the sky created thunder and lightning. Early man imagined that somebody in the sky was hitting a hammer. You know, they use these words like believed and imagined. And then they say, but today we know that lightning and thunder comes from the interaction of the clouds. And then the next sentence was, but we still do not know what causes thunder and lightning. So my daughter was pointing out this propaganda that they're using these very pejorative words. You know, early man, primitive tribal people, undeveloped countries. They believed, they imagined, they thought that there were some people in the sky creating thunder and lightning. But now we know it's just the clouds, although we still don't know why they do it. So, you know, who's the primitive, uncivilized people here, really? Hare Krishna. So it's something like saying, you know, primitive tribal people believe that somebody engineered a car. They believe that somebody drove a car. Now we know that the car drives because the petrol is being burned, which is turning the axle and turning the wheel. But we still don't know what causes the petrol to be burned. You know, so they're not really describing the cause. They're really describing just the mechanics of the thing. And being able to describe the mechanics of a thing doesn't describe the cause. Right? If we say that, all right, the way that a giwik is made, like you have Hari Priya making these giwiks, the way giwik is made is you take some cotton and you roll it up, but they're still not describing what causes it. What makes the cotton be put into a ball and rolled up? That they don't describe. So actually, those people are foolish. You know, but they want to say to people, if you want to be a civilized person and not so primitive, then you shouldn't believe in all the gods. That's just for the primitives, uncivilized people. We are very sophisticated, and we just believe that everything is mechanical. And so they use these kind of language, isn't it? Whereas actually, the so-called primitive tribal people were far more advanced in understanding the structure of the universe and the workings of the universe than the modern scientists. Just because they can give us the internet and cell phones, you know, they don't have a personalistic view of the universe. Whereas you find that in all the old civilizations of the earth, people knew that everything was personal, isn't it? Right? Like where we live in Hawaii, so we have volcanoes, and some of them are very active volcanoes, and people refer to the volcano as a person. She's Pele, and the people there, you know, even those who are not native Hawaiians, are very respectful of Pele. You know, there was a while when Pele started sending lava towards a town, and you know, some people who don't live on the island and don't understand the island culture, they were saying things like, well, can't you just use your engineering skills to divert the lava? First of all, diverting lava is not exactly a very simple thing to do. I don't think we even have any engineering skills to do that. But second of all, the mood of the islanders is not to mess with Pele. You know, you don't tell Pele where to go. You let her go where she wants to go. And you just respect her. And you can worship her and you can talk to her, but you don't try to tell her what to do. So this is the mood of the original persons of the earth. And they knew that, you know, not only electricity and not only volcanoes, but every forest, every river has its deity. And Srila Prabhupada talks about this also in this purport, because this verse talks about Adishwarai, the great demigods. And Prabhupada says, in other planets, there are other beings. You know, that we're not the only beings in the universe. Actually, even on this planet, there's many other beings. There's presiding deities. Every forest and every river and every mountain has its presiding deities. Those may not be very high-level beings. They're not like Indra and Chandra. But they certainly have powers beyond that of the human beings, especially the human beings in Kali Yuga. And everything's done by a person. There was a very famous, what was it called? Fintorn or something? Very famous agricultural project. I think it was in the UK, where they not only used biological, organic means of farming, but they also, when they were farming, had some respect for the local forest deities. And their farm just flourished more than even the other organic farms in the area. And, of course, we find this mood of Krishna in what pastime? In what pastime was Krishna talking about the local natural deities? See if we can get an answer from someone other than Janeshwari. What, since this is supposed to be a class for the families and the children, maybe if some of the children can answer, where would pastime? Was Krishna is saying we should worship the local forest deity? She's very shy. We have two very shy children here. All right, so maybe one of the grown-up children can answer. Do we have John? Is Jonathan here too? No, she's not here. Okay, so we have three very shy children in this children's class. Anybody care? Yes. Worshipping Govardhan Hill. Right, of course, that was an interesting one because there Krishna told everybody, don't worship the main demigod, worship the local deva. You know, worship the deva of our local forest. Actually, that was the way that people paid taxes in those days. People didn't pay taxes, the individual persons didn't pay taxes to the big centralized government. They paid taxes to the local government, and the local government took a portion of those taxes and paid it to the next government, and they took a portion and paid it to the central government. So when Yudhisthira was the emperor of the world, everybody wasn't paying to Yudhisthira. Just like in Vrindavan, where did they pay their taxes? Again, Janeshwari knows the answer. All right. You got to get a prize for this, for the end of this class. So they paid Tecumseh, right? We have Nandamarja and the cowherd men they're taking. And did they pay it in cash? Did they pay it in money? Did they bring New Zealand dollars? Tecumseh, how did they pay it? Huh? Did they give cows? They might have given cows. But what else did they give? And again, Janeshwari knows the answer. They gave milk products, so they were giving milk and yogurt and butter. They brought that to pay their taxes, which is just kind of an interesting way to pay taxes because milk products don't last very long. So, you know, if they weren't doing it every day. They weren't paying their taxes in milk products every day. At least it's not described like that. So you kind of wonder how that worked. Maybe the different villages each had their time. Like when Madhavendra Puri installed Gopal, so the different villages each brought their offerings on different days for Gopal. So maybe it worked like that. So anyway, they paid their taxes only locally. And you can understand how this would affect corruption. It would cut down on corruption if you're paying your taxes locally, because your local person would know whether or not you should be paying your taxes. You follow? When you're just dealing with the government at a distance, they don't really know what's going on. Anyway, so this was their idea. They were going to worship the local deity instead of Indra. And of course, Krishna kind of insulted Indra in the process. He didn't just say, we'll worship Govardhan and that offering will go to Indra. He just said, we don't have to worry about Indra at all. We only have to worry about Govardhan. Of course, the deity of Govardhan is actually Krishna himself. Govardhan is actually Krishna. So Govardhan is not simply some, you know, semi-demi-god or some little fairy or something. You know, Govardhan is actually Krishna. So in the whole universe, there's very great personalities. But Maharaj Parikit says that even these great demigods can't really understand how the universe was created. Even they're bewildered, even Indra and Chandra and Vayu and Surya, they're like, how did this happen? How did the Lord do this? It's inconceivable even to them who are managing it. You know, Brahma's creating it, and even to Brahma, it's not fully conceivable. I mean, just like a mother and a father have a baby, but they don't really know how that works. Right? So you're expecting a baby. Do you really know how you're building your baby in your body? It's just kind of happening, right? You're just eating food and drinking water and juice and going about your life, and your baby's just growing, right? You're not consciously saying, okay, blood, take the vitamins and minerals from my stomach and small intestines and put them through the umbilical cord. And okay, now we're building the heart. Now we're building the brain. Okay, make sure you build the brain like this. Right? We're not, even when we're doing it, we don't really know how we're doing it. Or you know you're building your fingernails, right? Are you building your fingernails? You notice that they grow, right? Do your fingernails grow? How do they do that? Do you know how they do that? Not really, right? You just know that you eat. You sit down to your rice and your chapatis and your broccoli and your peaches, and then you get fingernails. And how does that happen? You don't really know, even though you're kind of engineering it. So the demigods, they're engineering the universe, but they don't really understand quite how it's working, you know, even though they're organizing it. They're doing it. Or, you know, in our own home, we turn on a light, right? We plug in our computer. We turn on the blender. We turn on the stove. But we don't know how everything is working. So even the great demigods don't know how everything is working. Then Prabhupada also makes the point here. He says that Maharaj Parikit wasn't exactly asking, is there a God? He wasn't really saying, Does the universe happen automatically, or is there a God? It says here, it was, however, already known to Maharishi Brihat that everything we see is born out of the energy of the Lord. So Maharishi Brihat wanted to know the process of creation. The origin of creation was known to him. Otherwise, he would not have inquired how the personality of Godhead by his different energies creates this phenomenal world. So Maharishi Brihat was not saying, is there a God? That wasn't his question. He already understood that there was a God. He says, what's the word here for God? Can anyone find it in the Sanskrit? Anybody know the word for God here in the Sanskrit? What's the word for God? You had a child here for this children's class and you took him away. You won't sit still. That's it. We didn't need them to sit still. That's all. Come on, what's the word for God here in this verse? We should have prizes for a children's class, you know. We should have Burfi or something. What did she say? Bhagavan, yes. And Atma, anybody know what Atma means? The soul or the self. And Maya, everybody knows what Maya means? What does Maya mean? Illusion, but it means energy. So Bhagavan Atma Maya means his energy. And then we have Sriyate Vishvan. Sriyate means to create. Srijam Yaham. Y'all remember that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Srijam Yaham, I manifest myself. Vishvam, anybody know what Vishvam means? Like the Vishva Rupa? The universe. So he already knows it's Bhagavan Atma Maya. He already knows it's Krishna's energy. It's the energy of the Lord. Who's Srijate Vishvam, who manifests the universe. But he wants to know how. How does he do it? What's his process of doing it? And we often have that question too. You know, how did you make that? Like at the retreat in Otaki, they, on Ekadasi, they had this banana cake that was just awesome. You know, so I found the cook. How did you make it? So I didn't say, did a person make that cake? Or did it just appear on the table by itself? I didn't ask that question because I know the cakes don't appear on the table by themselves. No, so I knew somebody made it. Now, in my case, I didn't know who made it. I knew it had to be somebody at the retreat, most likely. But I didn't know who. In this case, Brihat already knew who. He already knew who did, but he wanted to know how he did it. Now, you might say, well, if the demigods can't figure out how the Lord does it, how is Maharishi Brihat going to figure it out? So you know what? We don't really fully try to figure out how Krishna creates the world. We're not like, okay, let's see exactly. I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj wanted to put together a book on Vedic creation. And then he decided that he wasn't going to do it. And I had all the work that he did. I had copies of it. I might still have it in Hawaii. I might have had it or I might have sent it all to Mumbai. And the problem he ran into is that there's different accounts of the creation in different places, and he couldn't sync them. You know, it's Lord Vishnu's glance, that's time, and then there's the lotus flower. He couldn't put them all together into one comprehensive whole, and he was working with Sataputta on it and other devotee scientists, and their conclusion was that the creation is described from like a different angle of vision. Do you know that even the scientists don't know whether electricity is a particle or a wave? And they say you can either describe it as particles or as a wave, but you can't describe it as particles and a wave simultaneously. You have to either look at it as a particle or look at it as a wave. And describing electricity as a particle gives you one set of theories, and describing it as a wave gives you another set of theories, and nobody really understands how it works, but they can still use it. So it was like that. Some of the accounts of creation are describing it in one way, and some are describing it in another way, and you can't really put them together and get a comprehensive description. You can use one way or another way. And the same happens with like quantum physics and Newtonian physics. They both describe the world, and you can do things with either theory, but you can't describe quantum physics and Newtonian physics together. They don't mesh. So even the great demigods can't describe it, but we can still, they can't understand it, rather, but we can still talk about it, how the Lord creates. And there's a lot of the Bhagavatam that's created, devoted to that. And then Srila Prabhupada talks in this purport, very interestingly, at the end. He says, Maharaj Parikshit didn't ask about the Lord's Vrindavan pastimes here in the second canto. And it said he wanted to hear first about the creation of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami did not say that the king should hear about the direct transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The time was very short, and naturally Sukadeva Goswami could have gone directly to the 10th canto to make a shortcut of the whole thing. But neither the king nor the great speaker of the Bhagavatam jumped up like the organizers of Bhagavatam. Both of them proceeded systematically. So if I was going to die in a week, if any of us was going to die in a week, would we go to someone and say, please tell me how the Lord created the material world? Probably not. You know, and you go through the Bhagavatam, you get to the fifth canto. The fifth canto is about the movements of the planets. Like, when does Mercury go retrograde? It's about that kind of thing. And if you think about it, you know, the fifth canto, 7 days, that was probably what, day three or four? Maybe it was like day three and a half with 12 cantos, and the 10th canto is really long. So let's say it was day three. So if I was going to die in 7 days and it was day three, would I be asking, can you please tell me when and how Mercury goes retrograde? But that's what they were talking about. You know, it's fascinating. So why were they doing this? They were doing this, as Prabhupada explains, because those who are in the material world must first of all know how the external energy of the Lord is working, and afterwards one may try to enter into the activities of his internal energy. Prabhupada talks a lot here about Durga Devi. And he says in the creation in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says there's also descriptions of the creation, and the neophyte devotees, Prabhupada says, should be seriously on guard against the pitfall of neglecting knowledge about Krishna in regard to how great he is. Only when one knows Lord Krishna's greatness can one firmly put one's unflinching faith in him. Otherwise, like the common man, even the great leaders of men will mistake Lord Krishna for one of the many demigods or a historical personality or only a myth. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan or even a Dwarka are relishable for persons who have already qualified themselves in advanced spiritual techniques, and the common man may be able to attain such a plane by the gradual process of service and inquiries. So here Prabhupada is saying, before you talk about Vrindavan or Dwarka, you should understand about how God creates the world. Don't just jump. So what does this mean practically for us? Well, we see if somebody goes directly, we were talking the other day about reading, and one devotee asked about, should the kids read Amar Chitra Katha, comic books, and my own feeling was no, because there Krishna is portrayed as if he's a human being or if he's just a demigod or something, or as a mythological personality. And if people go directly to Krishna's pastimes without understanding that Krishna is God, then they completely misunderstand him. And when they misunderstand him, then their worship of him and their dealings with him become very strange. And we see this particularly among the Hindus, where they're just, and we sometimes see it now more and more with our children born into the movement. It's becoming a problem with our own children, where if we don't teach our children anything, oh, look at that. All right. Okay. I'd actually like that for all my seminars. You know, it was really fun in Mayapur. I think it was for one of our Manashiksha seminars. We had three Manashiksha seminars in Mayapur. And for one of them, there was an 8-year-old girl, very amazing 8-year-old girl. Actually, we should have talked about her yesterday. This is totally off track, everybody. I'm just going off on a big tangent. Don't worry, I'll come back. So we had this 8-year-old girl who wrote her own book about Krishna Leela. She wrote and illustrated and published her own book about Krishna Leela, 8-year-old girl. And she would recite the Bhagavatam verses every class. And so for one of my Manashiksha classes, she brought a tray of cookies that she had made. And there weren't enough cookies for everybody in the class. There were a lot of devotees there. So we decided to use the cookies as prizes. So during the class, anybody who volunteered, you know, a really exciting contribution to the class or answered a question, so I would look at her and I'd say, okay, give that person a cookie. And so she'd take her tray around and she'd give them a cookie. So definitely Dineshwari gets one of these. And definitely Radha gets one of these, but we have that if anybody wants one. Okay, so we were talking about how Prabhupada says here that before we go to Krishna's intimate lila, we should study the creation. And we see that especially among Hindus and among even, you know, the children of our devotees, if they're not trained in philosophy, if all they know are Krishna's pastimes, then their ideas become a little weird. And you see that, you know, they'll think that Krishna's like Superman or Batman, or, you know, they'll think that Krishna's activities are immoral, right? Because Krishna does engage in some activities that are a little interesting from a materialistic moral perspective. You know, that he's dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night and he has gambling games with Radharani, you know. And we say, well, if Krishna's gambling with Radharani, so why can't we go to Las Vegas? So this is the problem. And therefore, one has to be grounded in philosophy. Now, I frankly see this as a problem in that we are now, which Prabhupada I'm sure would want us to do, but we are now translating and distributing many, many works of the Goswamis and many, many works of our acharyas that are just straight lila. Yes? And in every temple bookshop and in, you know, in every devotee community, we have now many, many books translated into English and Russian and so many languages written by our own acharyas, but that are just lila. There's not a drop of philosophy anywhere in those books. It's just lila. And the problem with those books is if you're not grounded in philosophy, you may have a very difficult time really understanding them. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada is one of the most amazing, and this is not to put down anyone else. We're not like putting down Narada Muni or somebody. But Srila Prabhupada is definitely a very amazing, empowered acharya. So let's think for a minute. What books did Srila Prabhupada produce in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement? Krishna book. What else? Srimad Bhagavatam, although the Bhagavatam came out very slowly, and Srila Prabhupada never finished the Bhagavatam. He ended at 10th canto, chapter 13. He never even finished the 10th canto, translating the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So we had first canto. What else? Easy Journey to Other Planets. Okay, what else? Isha Upanishad was also an early book. What else? Bhagavad Gita, yes. So we had first canto Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Isha Upanishad, Easy Journey to Other Planets, Krishna book. What else was a very early book? Nectar Devotion. Let's think about this for a minute. We had Bhagavad Gita, Isha Upanishad, Easy Journey to Other Planets, Krishna book, Nectar Devotion. My dear friends, we had Krishna book, we had the Nectar Devotion. I think Srila Prabhupada published Krishna book in 1970? I think so. It's like 69 or 70. And George Harrison, of course, paid for the publishing of Krishna book, and it was Jayananda who paid for the publishing of the Nectar Devotion, which was also published very, very early. I mean, when I joined the movement, we didn't even have second canto. Second canto was being produced. But we had Krishna book, and we had the Nectar Devotion. And we go on the streets, and we distribute Krishna book. Do we still distribute Krishna book on the streets? And we don't say to people, you have to first read Isha Upanishad, or you have to first read the Bhagavad Gita before you can read Krishna book. You know, and in the early days of the movement also, I mean, we of course would be reading these things simultaneously. So we were reading the Bhagavatam in the morning for morning class. We read the Bhagavad Gita for evening class. And then we all got together and we read the Krishna book before we went to sleep at night. And at least the temple where I joined, we had an afternoon nectar devotion class. And Srila Prabhupada for the Bhakti Shastri included the nectar devotion. of course, what's been done after Srila Prabhupada's left is that in our Bhakti Shastri class, we only discuss the first section of the Nectar Devotion. We only discuss the first ocean. We don't discuss the whole Nectar Devotion. But Prabhupada made that available. We were distributing Nectar Devotion on the street. So how is it that Srila Prabhupada's saying you have to first, you know, you have to go through the Bhagavatam systematically from Canto 1 to 10? Of course, even if you go through the Bhagavatam systematically, what are you ending up with in the second and the third canto? First, second, third canto. What are we reading in the first, second, third canto? Here we have a first canto Bhagavatam. So let's look at this first canto Bhagavatam. And, all right. We have here, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. The son of Drona punished. Now, in the chapter on the son of Drona punished, what pastimes are we accessing? What pastimes of Krishna are we accessing in the chapter, the son of Drona punished? Krishna and the Pandavas. And this is just first canto part one. There's a lot of pastimes of Krishna, especially in Dwarka and Hastinapur, but even in Vrindavan, in the first canto. And then we have here in the second canto, we also have, this is the whole second canto. Okay, we have the universal form. Bhagavatam is the answer. So here in the second canto, we have also about the incarnation. So we also have about Krishna and something about his pastimes. Then in the third canto, we have Uddhava and Vidura talking about Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and Krishna out of Vrindavan. So we have even in the early cantos of the Bhagavatam, discussions of Krishna in Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka, don't we? It's not that it's absent. And how did Srila Prabhupada do Krishna book? How did he write Krishna book so that we could distribute this to people who haven't even read Bhagavad Gita or Ishopanishad? What did he do? He wove the philosophy into it. So philosophy and Leela are just completely entwined. And, you know, we were talking in the school about Prabhupada's mood, right? What was it? There were three things. Prabhupada's teaching, mood, and mission. Was it those three? And this was Srila Prabhupada's mood. And we have to say, frankly, that this is not the mood even of all of our acharyas, both past and contemporary. So why is this specifically Srila Prabhupada's mood? Because Prabhupada's preaching to a worldwide audience. Rupa Goswami was not writing his books for people in Siberia who'd never heard of Krishna. That wasn't who he was writing them for. When he was sitting down, you know, and writing Vidugdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava or Jiva Goswami writing, you know, Madhava Mahotsava, they weren't writing for people in the Auckland airport. There wasn't even an Auckland airport. You know, it wasn't their audience. You have to remember what were they writing on? Were they writing on paper? Lalita, do you know what they were writing on? Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami and palm leaves. Yeah, they were writing on leaves. And if you wanted a book, you couldn't go to a bookstore and buy a book. You had to get somebody to write it for you. Just imagine, you know, if you wanted a book, somebody had to copy the book for you. So there wasn't a wide audience. It wasn't that a lot of people were reading these books. Right? So although they were writing these books and they wanted them distributed, it wasn't to the general public. So my point is we don't have to be afraid that, oh my God, I can't read Krishna book and I can't read the Nectar Devotion until I've thoroughly read, you know, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. No, you can read the Krishna book immediately. Anybody can read Krishna book immediately because it's integrated. You know, I haven't met the person who read Krishna book who came up with some weird misunderstanding about Krishna. It just doesn't happen. Or even Nectar Devotion. You know, it doesn't happen. Prabhupada has done it so expertly. So we have to also be careful in our preaching. And I've noticed that some of our ISKCON devotees are not so careful anymore. You know, that they'll just simply get into Leela without any kind of philosophy woven into it. But Srila Prabhupada did not do that. It wasn't his mood. Of course, Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted all the works of the Goswamis and our Acharyas translated and distributed and read. But we should certainly be careful that before we study those books that we've really are grounded in the understanding that Krishna is God. That we're grounded in the understanding of the modes of material nature and how the world is created. That we can relate to Krishna in our world also. That we're balanced. And we could talk, if this was not a children's class, if this was an adult class, then I would talk about things like immanence and transcendence and all sorts of Western philosophical ideas, but I'm not going to do that because this is a child's class. So just know that we could take this to another philosophical level about the importance of seeing Krishna in the world. And I'm sure that this is one reason why Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita talks about, I'm the light of. This is Krishna says, I'm the light of the sun. You're going to get all the sweets here, Janesh. He also says, I'm the light in all luminous objects. So that means even if you have a little luminous object like this, and it's having some light, that's Krishna. He says he joins with our air to digest our food. Right? So it looks like you're drinking something other than water there, right? So how are you digesting that? Krishna's digesting that. He's a fire in your stomach. You say, oh my God, I've got a fire in my stomach. But actually, that's why our bodies are warm. So he's the fire in our stomach. He's the air of life. And he's digesting that food. So we want to have that understanding also. Not just that Krishna's having a rasa lila. You know, not just that Krishna's having a boat lila as we have here. Not only that. Not only that we have here all of our pictures. Krishna and Balaram running in the forest, Krishna holding up Govardhan Hill, Radharani talking to a bee, universal form, Krishna's Janmashtami celebrations. We have all these wonderful pictures. But not only that, we should also know how Krishna's our fire of digestion, how Krishna's our intelligence, how Krishna's our ability. We should also be able to see Krishna in our daily life. Otherwise it becomes, you know, Krishna's over there in the spiritual world and my material life is over here. And we don't make a connection. And then we say, okay, well, I'm going to do all kinds of things that I enjoy in the world and I'm also going to spend some time chanting Hare Krishna. And this is a problem you see in all religions, isn't it? God is just at a certain time of the day or a certain time of the week. And I see that this is, you know, it's a problem with the Hindus who come to our temple. That their spirituality may be confined to when they do their puja every day or when they come to the temple. And it can be a problem for our children in the movement. That they say, okay, you know, I play computer games and I watch movies and I do whatever I do, but I also have some time for kirtan. It becomes a piece of my time instead of integrated. And the only way we can integrate Krishna in our lives is to understand how he's in this material energy. Because that's what we're interacting with. Of course, at a certain point of advancement, that's no longer necessary. Because then you see Krishna's transcendental pastimes even in this world. Like Lord Chaitanya, he saw Govardhan Hill. He said, oh, there's Govardhan Hill, when actually it was what? What was it? It was a sand dune. Oh, there's my Giriraj. And he saw the river Jamuna when it was actually the ocean. Oh, there's my Yamuna. And he jumped into it. So at a certain level, we look at everything and we say, oh, there's the forest of Vrindavan. There's the Yamuna. There's Govardhan. Right? We look at all the devotees and we say, oh, here's all the residents of Vrindavan. And then we don't really need anymore to meditate on how Krishna is the fire of digestion. Not when one comes to that point. And the last point I want to make here is Prabhupada says something really kind of sweet and heart-churning here when he talks about how foolish people cannot understand how God is creating, or maybe they don't even understand that there's a God at all. And they just go through their lives as if all there is this world and all we are is matter. And Krishna has this verse, Avajananti Mamudha Manusim Tanamasritam. Panambhava Majanantam Mamabhutta Maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. And Prabhupada says this, such a sweet thing. He says, the Lord regretfully says this verse. He says it with regret. Krishna has feelings. And he doesn't like to say this verse. It's so sad that people don't understand me. It's so sad that they don't understand that I'm here, that they don't understand. And this comes from either not knowing there's a God at all, or not appreciating how he creates, or knowing something about Krishna, but knowing him in the wrong way. Knowing him without any philosophical base. Knowing him just in some sentimental way. And those are the three ways in which Krishna has to say, you know, you're really foolish. And you don't really understand me as I am. Again, of course, the very advanced devotees, that's not their interest. The residents of Vrindavan, they're not philosophizing about how Krishna is God. Like Mother Yasoda right there, she's seeing the universal form. And when she sees the universal form, she starts to philosophize and say, oh, actually, I'm just an illusion, thinking that this land is mine and I'm the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Right? But she doesn't get into my son must be God. She just says, oh, maybe there's some mystic power bewildering me. Right? Oh, my little son, are you okay? Are you okay? So the residents of Vrindavan, they're not in this mood of how Krishna creates the world, and they're not in this mood of how Krishna is God. But when they preach in this world, the residents of Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada's definitely resident of Vrindavan, as is Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, when they preach in this world, they also preach like that. Because otherwise they can't bridge people to Vrindavan. Which means they all know that. The residents of Vrindavan, they all know that Krishna is God. It's not that they don't know. Otherwise, how could they come here and preach about it? But when they're in their mood with Krishna, that's put way to the background. It's so far to the background that they're hardly aware of it. Just like, you know, if some family member, your mother, your father, your husband, or whatever, is some big person in the world, they're a Nobel scientist. So you know that. But when you're interacting with them, you don't interact with them like that. Right? The husband or wife of the president or the prime minister, they don't call their spouse, excuse me, Mr. President. You know, they deal with them more intimately. And that's, they know my spouse is the prime minister, but it's way in the background. It's not something that's in their conscious awareness. So what should we do with verses like this? We should try to appreciate how Krishna has created the world. We should try to appreciate Krishna in everything in our life, in our breath, in the light, in the heat, in our ability. We should appreciate Krishna in the creation. We should see the creation as Krishna's energy and not just see, oh, there's a tree. We should see Krishna made the tree. Krishna's in the tree. The tree is for Krishna's service. And if we're at a certain point, then we should see, oh, there's Krishna's tree. Maybe he's hiding. And in this way, both through Krishna's transcendental pastimes and through Krishna's creation of the world, we should eventually fall in love with Krishna. So thank you very much. I hope you adults didn't mind the children's class for the few children who were here. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Janeshwari, yes. Yes, it used to be the mountains would fly. Still, I'm sure in some places in the universe, mountains fly. I don't remember why Indra was cutting off their wings, yeah. I think it was Indra. I'd have to look that up. Anybody remember why Indra cut off the mountains' wings and stopped them from flying around? I mean, we could guess, right? Be kind of troublesome to have these huge mountains flying around. But I'm sure on some planets, mountains still fly. That'd be pretty far out, huh? The mountains start flying around. But at least the volcanoes are definitely living. At least volcanic mountains are definitely alive. They're growing, they're producing byproducts, they're having all the symptoms of a living body. Interesting body to have. Yes? Is working in the world. Oh my goodness. Guruvani, you're asking me like a 5-week discussion here. So Guruvani was asking how it's important for the children to know the philosophy, and is it the only way they can understand that by knowing how Krishna is acting in the sun and etc. And at what age do we teach them different things? So I think that's a school discussion, right? That's a whole syllabus. At what age do we teach different parts of the philosophy? And of course, Srila Prabhupada said that we welcome first-day babies to the Bhagavatam class. Srila Prabhupada said we welcome first-day babies to the Bhagavatam class. I'm going to say that again. Srila Prabhupada said that we welcome first-day babies to the Bhagavatam class. I'm not quite sure who the we is there. That's what he said. So if children are regularly exposed to hearing Srila Prabhupada's books, then they are going to get all aspects of the philosophy. And Prabhupada wanted that from the beginning. Of course, when you're giving a class specifically to children and you're talking specifically to children, you want to have something that's for their understanding. But that's not just age, that's also the individual that you're working with. So some children can understand some things at 4 and 5 years old that other people, some of us can't understand when we're 40. So it really depends on the individual. But generally for the very little children, you just talk about how we're not this body and how, Krishna is God and how he made the world and, that every living entity is a soul and that kind of very basic philosophy. And then gradually as they ask more questions, I think you can also take it by what kind of questions they ask. Of course, some kids don't ask a lot of questions. To respond appropriately to the natural inquisitive nature of the human being. But if we do teach Prabhupada's books to the children, which we definitely should be doing, and so many of you are helping Aruda to put together this book, How to Teach the Bhagavatam to the Children. And we have so many books on how to teach Bhagavad Gita to the children. So then that will naturally come. Srila Prabhupada if we stick to Srila Prabhupada's books, then it's all there. But you got to be careful if we're only telling the children stories from children-eyes books. We also want them to be hearing Srila Prabhupada's books. And especially we want to be careful of, just like videos about Krishna that are just where there's no philosophy in them, just stories, and the comics, and especially those comics that are made by people who aren't even devotees. So I'd say especially be careful of things about Krishna that are made by people who don't even understand that Krishna is God. That could be a real problem. But you want to keep the natural personal attraction of the child to Krishna. So the children growing up as devotees, they have a natural personal relationship with Krishna. You don't want to mess that up. You don't want to take that away from them. Is that all right? For a very short answer to what could be a very long, long, long question. Yes. So you're saying there's so many books and you feel Prabhupada's books are a lifetime study, especially for busy grihasthas. Well, this is also a very long discussion. Because in Srila Prabhupada's books, he directly tells us to read at least some of these specific books of the Acharya. I mean, there are specific books that Srila Prabhupada mentions in his books and says we should read them. And when Prabhupada mentioned them, they weren't translated. I mean, one of the reasons the BBT translated the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami is that Srila Prabhupada specifically said that in his purports. So we have this thing that if you read Prabhupada's books, and you don't just read them, but you actually read them to apply them, then you are also going to be reading other books. Or like in Nectar of Instruction, in text 8, Prabhupada talks about the Astakalila Lila. But there's no place anywhere in Srila Prabhupada's books where he explicitly and distinctly and directly and discreetly describes the Astakalila Lila. He describes it, if you know what it is, then he's describing it all over the place in little bits and pieces. But he doesn't describe it all in one place. So how are you going to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions in the Nectar of Instruction, text 8, if you don't read these other books also? So this is the conundrum. At the same time, Prabhupada told Jamuna, when Radha Lunda and Ishwara were installed, he said, the books we have now are sufficient. And Prabhupada had hardly translated the Bhagavatam at that point. And Prabhupada often told the devotees, and particularly he would tell Shruti Kirti, who says that he wasn't so much into reading, and Prabhupada would say to him, you know, one word, one sentence is sufficient in any of my books. So then I think you come to, you know, who are you as an individual? So some people are voracious readers. And they can read all of Srila Prabhupada's books many, many times and also read many of the Acharya's books and keep up their daily reading of Srila Prabhupada's books. And then you have other people who, you know, if they can get through all of Srila Prabhupada's books in their lifetime, that would be an amazing situation. You know, if they can read through the whole Bhagavad Gita, that would be amazing. I mean, we have people who aren't readers. They don't like to read. You know, usually for those people, I say, well, what about audiobooks? You know, can you hear the books or can you have a study time or something like that? And you have all, you know, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in 10, it's either 10 or 10:11, in the Tesham, Sajjata Yuktanam, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yenim Amapayantitam, Tesham, Evanu Kampartam, Aham Agyanam Tamaha. Text 10. It's a Tesham Sadhata Yuktanam. Prabhupada says, a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he's still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna. That work should be done with love. And then I think also, in text 11, you may also, no, it's just text 10. So Prabhupada's saying, you know, even if you have everything there, that Krishna will help you if you just do some service. As far as having, you know, time, it's not just in the household or ashram. The sannyasis are pretty busy too. You know, I think most of us are very busy in service. I mean, my own suggestion is that everybody should read Prabhupada's books, and everybody should read Prabhupada's books every day. But Prabhupada also asked us to read the books of the Acharyas. He specifically asked us to. At least it's nice to study some of them, and which books you study depends on you. You know, but that's something, that's a specific thing to discuss with your own guru or your own mentor or, you know, your own senior people. What should I read? I mean, I remember there was one devotee who came to me and said, you know, I just don't read at all. And I said, why not? And she said, well, you know, I was told first I have to read Bhagavad Gita, then I have to read the whole Bhagavatam, then I have to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. She said, but I don't like Bhagavad Gita. She said, every time I pick it up, I fall asleep. I said, are there any of Prabhupada's books that you like? And she said, I love the Nectar Devotion. I said, then read that. She said, but then I'm reading it out of order. I said, but otherwise you're reading nothing. You know, I said, much better to just sit and read the Nectar Devotion over and over again than to read nothing. And, you know, I know, like Hanuman Prasad Swami, he reads the Nectar of Instruction over and over and over and over again. And Kadambakananda Swami reads the Chaitanya Charitamrita over and over again. I know Niranjana Swami reads the Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Kanapur over and over again. So, but that's... I like to keep reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and then also I read some of the books of our acharyas, and then there's certain books I also read over and over and over and over and over. Some of Prabhupada's books I'm reading over and over and over and over and over. Just recently, I read The Teachings of Lord Chaitanya for only the second time. I had read that book before I moved into the temple, and I hadn't read it since, because then Chaitanya Charitamrita came out, and so I read that, and I read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and I read the Chaitanya Mangala. But I never went back to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Just recently I did and went, wow. Wow, I really missed out not having this in my reading, you know, my reading program. That's so individual. But I would suggest, because Prabhupada, and this is not, we're not comparing Prabhupada with Rupa Goswami or comparing Prabhupada with Narada Muni. It's not like that kind of a thing. But Prabhupada is special, and he wrote his books for us now. And Prabhupada had the special empowerment of how to bring Krishna consciousness to people in New Zealand and America and Russia and China and Brazil now. That was his special empowerment given by Krishna. And he's our link to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Kavi Karnapurit. I mean, I hear devotees say, oh, I understand Srila Prabhupada through the acharyas. And I always just think, how do you do that? How is it even possible? What's your process for doing that? How would that work? You know, you accessing Rupa Goswami directly? I can't get my head around it. So my understanding is I'm accessing all of them through Srila Prabhupada. Like, how am I connected to my family, through my parents. You know, even if my uncle raised me or my grandmother raised me, they're still my uncle and my grandmother because of my parents. I'm still going through my parents, isn't it? Right? Otherwise, how would I be part of that family? So, you know, we're connected through Srila Prabhupada. My humble suggestion, or I don't know if I have any humble suggestions. Anyway, my suggestion is that everybody read Srila Prabhupada's books every day. Even if it's just a line, even if it's just a verse, even if it's just one screen on your mobile phone, you know. Something from Srila Prabhupada's books. And if we can't read, then to hear something from Srila Prabhupada's books every day. Or both. You know, I try to do both. I try to both read from Srila Prabhupada's books every day and hear from Srila Prabhupada's books every day. And also, especially as we mature in Krishna consciousness, it's a very nice thing to read something from the acharyas. Because Prabhupada told us to. And the benefits I see of reading from the acharyas is I find it deepens my appreciation for Srila Prabhupada a lot. And I don't know. It's just like in the champus, the Ananda Vrindavan champu, the Gopal champu. They're giving all this detailed description of the leelas and the pastime places and the personalities that Sukadeva Goswami didn't give. You know, they're giving all of that. I mean, of course, if you read the Bhagavatam, then the personalities can just reveal themselves to you. But what I find is that I feel like I get to know the personalities. That it's not just, you're not just reading to get a plot. You understand? You're reading to actually get some relationship with these personalities. Because after all, we're going to be part of their world. We are really already part of their world. We're just maybe half asleep. But we're going to be part of the world of Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda. Who are they? How do they think? How do they feel? What do they do? Is that okay? All right, we need to end now. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.